Unibet. Episode 103. Kirk Fury, Head Coach, Team Austria U20.
I think the biggest thing coming away is the experience that these players will have moving forward. And they can take that away and hopefully they've learned from it. And then moving forward, if they become pro hockey players or pro at whatever it is that they do in their life, that they're able to take those tools moving forward, those experiences, and they're better people for it, and they're better colleagues, better teammates for it.
Die Tribüne erhebt sich. Und der Hexenkessel kocht. Da bleibt kein Moment, um einmal durchzuatmen. Bring it on. Mit dem Torhänder abgefälscht und die Scheibe im Tor. Aus dem Nichts. Wie schön war das gemacht.
Unibet Hockey. O'clock. Christmas time normally is the time where everything gets a little calmer for a lot of people, but not for the people that are covering, that are playing, that are coaching in the second most important annual hockey tournament. It's, of course, the World Juniors that are happening in Canada. Starting on the second day after Christmas, it's going to happen in Halifax. It's going to happen in Moncton. And of course, Team Austria is going to be part of that. And it gives me great pleasure to finally have him on. He's been on the shortlist of the podcast anyways. But as he's the head coach of Team Austria's U20 team that heads to Halifax and hopefully stays in the A-pool, it's great to have him on. It's none other than Kirk Fury. And Coach Fury is so thankful that you're taking the time for Unibet Hockey O'Clock.
Thanks for having me on, Martin.
Coach, the people who know you know that your German is excellent, and we could have done the conversation in German anyways, but because of the fact that it's an international tournament and that so many people might be curious about things that go on within Team Austria, I thought it might be a good idea to record this conversation in English. I hope it's okay for you as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're being really nice by saying my German is really good. But no, I'm absolutely okay with it. And so looking forward to it.
Coach, for the very few people who are listening to this podcast, because the U20 has always been, or the World Juniors have always been a hot topic the last couple of years. But if there's anyone out there who doesn't understand why the World Juniors are so big, how would you explain that to them?
And actually something, it actually, when you say it to me right now, it sends chills down my spine when you ask me a question like that, because I guess this is going to be a bit of a long answer because where it is, everybody knows, or most people know, the magnitude when it's held in North America, the amount of fans that will come out to it. But it was something growing up that, and it still is, and that's kind of, by talking to people here, it's kind of neat to know that it's still the same way. When we woke up on the 26th of, or you look forward to it, and I have to say my son is the same way still now. On the 26th, when you woke up, you watched hockey all day. You got ready, you sat on the couch, and you watched the World Juniors, and it was such an exciting thing. It was the talk of the town. Talk of the country for the week before, for sure. And obviously Christmas is an extremely important time for family and friends, and it actually is an opportunity for everybody to get together and sit around and really enjoy the company of each other. And the magnitude of it here, especially here in Nova Scotia, there's a couple of things for me with the players here is that I was really hoping that things didn't change so much, because it's been a few years since we've been back, and it absolutely has not changed. And the hospitality is one of those things, and how people embrace it. Like I said, the hospitality with the people, and the guys have been saying to me, like, these people are really nice here. And so, you know, they're willing to give you a ride when you need a ride. They look upon every team the same. It doesn't matter your ranking in the world. For instance, we had practice. We had practice last night, and there's kids waiting. There's kids waiting in the stands. They're They want to touch the guy's gloves coming off. You know, and this is the part of the tournament too that I really want the players to experience, because over the past 2 or 3 years here, everybody knows with COVID, these guys really haven't been able to, you know, the players that have been here, and for the players that have never been here, they've never had the opportunity to really experience the atmosphere that's going to be in the rinks. So it is something that is for sure something that this country, and I have to say, especially this province here in Nova Scotia, embraces. The way I believe, and this is my own opinion, they look at this tournament as the World Cup of soccer for them. You know, they really embrace it. They want to do the best. And quite honestly, it's a small province here in Canada, and they really want to let everybody know that they can do it just as well as anybody else. And so it's something that, you know, I'm really looking forward to. And obviously, it goes without saying that the hockey part of it is the most important to us. We're here to not just be here. We're here to make some noise, and we're here to be very present.
And that's probably just scratching the surface of everything that goes into the World Juniors. Now, you were born and raised in Nova Scotia. The tournament is taking place, or the Group A plays its games in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Obviously, the same state, but your hometown is 4.5 hours away. As of right now, there's camp in a place basically in between your hometown and Halifax. What does it mean for you as a Nova Scotia guy to be a head coach at this tournament in your home state?
Emotional question, but it's a dream come true, to be quite honest with you. It's something that I don't think you could write a script. First and foremost, I'm thankful to the Federation, I'm thankful to Katse, my home club, for allowing me the opportunity for this. I'm grateful to the players, because it's something that, you know, it's my first experience, you know, with an international, with a national team. So it's something that, you know, I didn't think about so much. Obviously, you get excited, like I told you, as a person, just getting excited for Austria, just to be a part of the tournament. Like I said, whether I'm the head coach or not, I still would have the feeling of hoping that if these players came, that they get to experience, like I said, the hospitality, the way the province embraces it. But it's definitely something that, like you say, we're in Antigonish, Nova Scotia. I'm actually born here in this town, and I was only here for a year. But like you say, it doesn't matter where you are here in this province. Everybody kind of knows everybody in a way, or they know somebody who knows or knows someone else. But it's just something that I don't think you could write it kind of any better in a way. But first and foremost, like I said, it is hockey first. We're here to do a job. We're here to you know, obviously our goal is to win a game. In our pool here, or in our group stage. So that's the first and foremost. And then it's all about the process, and then we'll take care of the rest as it comes.
And by saying that, you would write U20 or World Juniors history, Austrian World Juniors history, if you were able to indeed pull out a game, because it's never happened before. And Team Austria indeed got close last time around against Switzerland, but that's for another time. Obviously, the attention the tournament is getting in Canada is incredible. This tiny little podcast tries to help raise awareness about the tournament that it is happening. There are some broadcasts, if I'm informed correctly, again on Austria's main or public. Public TV again, but in general, the attention a tournament could be getting in Austria, in my estimation, could be bigger. Is it a sentiment that you share as well, or is it already there where you want to see it?
I have to agree with you, and I think the biggest reason though is because of the magnitude of it here. I think that it would be, you know, it would be great if it was, you know, you would love to have it the same way as it is here in Canada, the way, you know, where it's nationally televised every single game and whatnot. Not just, you know, not just the one game or something like that with Austria and stuff like that, but it's a work in progress. I think that the attention, that it needs to garner, is something that needs to be built. And we as, you know, a team here, I think we can do our part in trying to do that. And so that's our goal, obviously, is because we're constantly trying to build Austrian ice hockey. We're trying to put it on the map on a more consistent basis. I think obviously, being here for the last 3 years, you know, there's obviously a lot of not so good things from COVID, but, you know, it's allowed this team to be in here for the third consecutive time, which has given an opportunity to kids that would maybe, hopefully, we'd like to believe that we would have been here. But it doesn't happen three times in 2 years either. So that's kind of, but like you say, it would be great for sure to garner more attention. But that also comes with success, and that's just the way it is. When you have success, people want to be a part of it. So we're going to do our best and we'll do our part here, in Nova Scotia, to be able to try to contribute to being able to be more present and more on the map.
And then again, no one would have believed that it would be Austria's fourth goal, pardon me, at the April World Juniors when they finally got promoted back in 2019 in Belarus. But with COVID and some other stuff that's been going on a grander political scale, it is possible for Austria to be there a fourth time, play itself onto national television and be part of the 10 best countries in the world as regards junior hockey. When we talk about you personally, and you've already alluded to it being very emotional for you, how did you, or when did you find out that you were considered being the head coach, or when you found out that you were indeed going to Halifax as the World Juniors or the U20 head coach for Austria?
Yeah, I believe it was, to be quite honest with you, the exact day, but I believe it was in August, and I was given a phone call and asked if I'd be interested in taking on the job. And for me, it was obviously a no-brainer. I've always wanted to potentially work, you know, in international ice hockey, to have that opportunity. You know, obviously you have to go through the proper channels to make sure that it can happen and whatnot. Obviously with our team in the Alps Hockey League, it gives me an opportunity because, we have such a long break, which is unfortunate for our other players and whatnot, but it is something that we have to deal with every year because we're not quite sure how many players we'll have between our first team and our players leaving for the World Juniors. So, it was something that was caught off guard, to be quite honest with you. I wasn't expecting it. But with that being said, it was something that I was extremely honored, thankful, and proud to be asked to do. So, I believe it was not knowing the exact date, but I think I almost fell off my chair. So I was a little bit, the date was something that, I believe it was in August, to be quite honest with you.
I remember when the news came out and I thought, not a bad choice. And I talked to a lot of people in and around the Federation, and everyone was very much looking forward to having you coach the team, having you bring the team over to Canada. So obviously some high expectations, but some well-deserved ones. What's always interesting when you get some kind of life-changing or life-altering news, what was the first phone call or the first text? Whom did you try to get in contact with? Family, friends, coaches? Who was it?
I think, to be quite honest with you, I think the first person, I had to digest it. That was the first thing. I had to kind of, and I think the first person I tried to get in contact with was Oliver Poloni. So obviously I have to make sure that, respecting the club and whatnot, I want him to know, because it's a small world. And if when people ask and whatnot, that maybe, it might get out. I want to make sure that the club knew first that I was offered this. And so I would say another important person, obviously family is really important. My wife was somebody that I obviously consulted with because it's over Christmas. That was without hesitation. It was, if the opportunity was there, yes. And then my brother was somebody I also reached out to because he's been a very, obviously everybody's parents are really important in their journey along the way, but my brother's a big part of it too. So he was somebody I reached out to also.
We're going to talk about the journey, especially the one as a coach and a head coach in a bit, but the one thing, and it obviously honors you to call the GM of your team first, but it's something completely new, coaching a national team. And I can just imagine it's incredibly difficult to work oneself or to get an overview of the tasks at hand. How did you try to come up with the roadmap and what were kind of the first steps that you had to take as head coach of Austria's U20 team?
Yeah, I think it was a bit overwhelming to start because it was a new journey. And so, to be quite honest with you, I tried to stick to the process that we stick to with our club here. The biggest difference was really getting to know the players that are available. I think I know most of the kids. I know most of the players just from the Alps Hockey League and whatnot. But the big thing, too, was getting to know some of these kids, these players personally. So giving them a phone call, some of the kids just giving a phone call to some of these players to get to know them a little bit. It's quite different than meeting them personally. So that was one of the first things I did. And then I was trying to get a process in place in terms of, like you said, a roadmap. For first and foremost was the November camp. And to be quite honest with you, it's when you have your own club team, another big priority for me is that I wasn't being spread too thin or trying not to be. I think it goes without saying that you are going to be spread a little bit thin, but I really didn't want to take away the focus also from our team in Klagenfurt, in the Alps League. So that was for sure a challenge, but, with David Fisher and Christoph Brandner and Klagenfurt, had really good support from those guys. And so the biggest thing though is that it's all about a process here. Everybody has a goal, but I really believe that you have to stick to the process, the day to day. And then I believe that the results really take care of themselves. And that's kind of what we try to instill in our players. And that was the other thing, it was trying to identify what it was that we wanted to not only have our end goal, but the message that we wanted to bring to the players. So that was another big part of trying to organize and trying to put into place something that was going to be able to resonate with the players.
You were already talking about the support that you got in Klagenfurt from David Fisher, from Christoph Brandner, but you're also had the task of creating a team that supports you during the tournament. And it's an interesting group of assistants that you chose. It's Nate Casimiro. Some still know him as a player for Klagenfurt's Alps team. He was an assistant coach for Klagenfurt's Alps team. With you, it's Matthias Lange and Lukas Schluderbacher, two former goaltenders, but only one has the official quote-unquote goaltending coach duties over. How did you come up with the staff? On paper, it looks incredible. Lots of experience, Nate DiCasimiro, now with the Iowa Wild as an assistant coach, naturally with Marco Rossi right now. On paper, looks incredible, but what made you decide that this is your staff that should head with you to Halifax?
Well, I think, to be quite honest with you, when I say this, I think it was a great idea. I think they wanted to keep on the staff as much as possible with the experience, and so Matthias and Lucas were here already, which again, great people, really really good guys to work with, and very knowledgeable. So really happy to have those guys. With Nate, I built a relationship with Nate. Nate came to play actually for the Alps team at the end of his career. And then we had a plan that maybe he would slide into being an assistant coach the following year. And that's what happened. And to be quite honest with you, Nate and I built a pretty good relationship, a friendship. And obviously you can have a friendship, but you also have to see about people's work ethic and stuff. And so Nate is a very eager guy. He wants to learn. He wants to, you know, he work is not an issue. So, like I said, it was something that I think it was pretty sure it was the first name that popped in my head. And so it was, like I said, I chose Nate, Matthias and Lucas, were here, and I couldn't be happier with the staff. Like I said, we have a really good chemistry. I believe we have a lot of fun. But we also know that we're here to accomplish something. So when it's work, it's work. And when it's time to chuckle a little bit, it's a pretty good dynamic.
You already talked a little bit or hit the topic of the November camp that you guys had and the tournament and that went on in St. Paulton. What were the takeaways from that tournament? Granted that it's only a short turnaround up until the tournament, there's basically roughly 1.5 months to draw the right conclusions from the tournament. But what were the main points that you took away from St. Paulton?
Well, from first and foremost, we tried to bring players that had character and players that had good attitudes, and that went without saying. I think that we can check that box off, that we got really good kids. Everybody bought in. And that was one of our goals is for the camp. And so the second thing, I was really impressed with how engaged a lot of players were. And when I say a lot, I pretty much mean the whole group. The chemistry was good. They got along. They held each other accountable, but in a respectful way. And I have to be quite honest, for my first experience with the national team, I was very, very happy. To be quite honest with you, I didn't know what to expect. I just, like I said, we had main focuses that we wanted to see as a staff. And I have to say, maybe I'm being a bit overzealous, but I think that it was something that we came away from going, wow, that was pretty good. So, those were the takeaways from it. And, it actually made it even better looking forward to the next phase of, the process.
We've obviously hit this next phase of the process with camp now in Nova Scotia. We're recording this conversation a couple of days prior to it's seeing the day of light and appearing on everybody's podcast feed. And then we still got a couple of days up until the tournament starts on the 26th. What are the things that you're now trying to work on as the tournament is inching closer?
Well, we've actually kept the structure fairly similar to November because we have about five guys, I believe it is, that weren't a part of the group in November. So the first and foremost is called all the players that we didn't bring, and all the players that we brought, that we touched base with the parents. And what we want to do now is to integrate and bring that message from November forward to this part of the process, to this phase of the process that really we can get these other, we get the players that weren't here to buy into to our message and what we want to accomplish here. Another part that's, we want to be aggressive. And when I say aggressive, I mean that we want to be a team that's constantly moving. And so that's something that we really want to get across to the players. So we're pushing them. And I have to be quite honest with you. Now that this is the second time with most players, the push in the beginning was to get to know guys a little bit, to kind of scan the group and see personalities and whatnot. Now we know them a little bit better. So now the push is going to be there but in a positive way, because it's a short tournament. So that's the biggest thing. And to be quite honest with you, I've been in Europe for 60 or for almost 20 years, sorry, and the ice sheet. The ice sheet is quite a bit smaller here. So it's something that we want to play a style that's fast, it's a style that's in your face type of thing. So that's now even trying to push that message forward, because there's less time and space. There's not only less time and space for us, there's less time and space for the opponent. So that's kind of the message that we're trying to push here now with the group also.
It's an interesting group that you've already talked a little about. It's a group of returning players. It's a group of new players. It's a group of players, or where some players will be under media and scout scrutiny. The one that kind of stands out and that makes each and every available draft list at this point is defenseman David Reinbacher. If the draft happened today, he'd probably be a first-round pick. He's gotten lots of attention for his play in Switzerland. The bus with all the scouts probably not getting any smaller when he's playing in Canada. How do you deal with him specifically, knowing that he'll be one player that everybody has, every scout has kind of got him on his radar?
Well, first and foremost, we're going to support the player. That if he needs any help with that type of stuff, with that attention and whatnot. But as you've said, I've followed David now for, obviously, since I was given the position. And everybody have seen the trajectory of David throughout the year, and it's just gotten better and better for him. But I think he's a kid that is, I explain him as, from what I know of him so far, he's very humble. He's a very good kid. And I think he's a kid that just loves to play hockey. And it's kind of his stage when he gets out there. And so I think that's a really good quality that players a player like him has, that he can kind of, if you will, turn off the noise a little bit. And yeah, so I think he's a kid that can embrace these situations. And as I said, he's played in the first league in Switzerland now the whole year. So he's playing in front of some pretty big crowds and whatnot, and getting enough attention. So I think he's got some experience with dealing with that type of stuff.
When asking you to jump onto the pod, I first of all knew that your time was limited, and there's a bus to be reached. So I'll try to keep this conversation fairly short. I also wanted to introduce you to a broader hockey audience. I know you're a well-known name in and around Klagenfurt, and obviously everybody on the Alps Hockey League level knows you, and all those people who saw your play back in the day with Klagenfurt. But to all those people who are new to Kirk Fury, I thought, well, is there a person who might be able to help me explain the journey that you took as a coach? And I got a great assist from KAC press official Hannes Biedermann, who put me in touch with Ryan Foster, well-known former KAC player as well. He's been successful as a coach, as a head coach. And I asked Ryan Foster to tell me a little bit about the evolution of Kirk Fury as a coach. This is what he said.
So I've actually known Kirk for quite a long time. The funny thing is that when I left playing KAATSE in 2007, Kirk came in the following year. We never had a chance to play with each other or play against each other. But obviously when I retired, I made the move back to Klagenfurt. Kirk was still playing at that time. I ended up joining the organization as a junior coach and got to know Kirk during that time. We became really, really close friends, spent a lot of time together. And I know the situation back then was Kirk, after he retired, he took the assistant coaching job with the first team under Doug Mason. Spent a year with the first team as the assistant coach. I believe that Doug had left during the season, and the following season, Mike Pellegrimus was brought in, and Mike Pellegrimus wanted to bring in his own assistant coach. So back at that time, Dieter Kalt was our sport director. We made the decision to put a team for the first time in the Alps League. And I was going to take over at that point, and we were looking for someone that's would actually be a good hand to help out. And Kirk's name came up. He was still in the organization. We were trying to maybe find out where he could fit in at that point. And I thought it was a perfect situation. Kirk and I running the Alps team for the very first year. Kirk has a lot of experience. He was also a defenseman. I was a forward, and it was great chemistry. You know, we took over the first year, spent the year together. I learned a lot from Kirk, and he's a guy that kind of wears his heart on his sleeve. He's very knowledgeable. He wants the best for the players. He's always trying to help them out. He's trying to help them out try and, you know, help them with becoming a professional, especially at that point when we were coaching the Alps team together. He's a guy that's, you can tell right away when he talks to the players, he exhibits confidence. So he's the kind of guy that when he talks, the players listen to him. And he's also a coach that's very tactical, little small details. It was great working with him. It's like I said, I learned a lot from him. I know that, he's constantly, as a coach, trying to get better. I think he's done an outstanding job the last years, and I'm really, really happy for him that he got the chance to take over the under 20 team. He absolutely deserves it. He's been in the business now for I would say a good 7 or 8 years, and he's starting to make a good name for himself. But like I said, he's just a really positive influence, especially on the players. I think the players respect him, and he's done a great job so far.
Big words from a great coach, and lots of things in there to digest. I want to get to the confidence that he mentioned, that's almost second bar none. Is that one of the main traits? Does it have to be one of the main traits a coach has to have?
I think personally, first and foremost, I think those words from Ryan are very, really nice. Ryan says he learned a lot from me. I learned a lot from Ryan also. And I'm really happy for him. And Ryan's a great person. Talks about caring about the players and whatnot. He cares about people a lot too. And that's just a quality that he has. And I think, and touching on that, I think as a coach, this is just what I would like to be as a coach. I think you need to be first and foremost vulnerable. I think you need to be somebody that cares about people. First and foremost, we can have all the tactics that we want. But if the player doesn't know that you actually care about them, because there's going to be moments that, you know, we all played, and there's going to be moments that are going to be frustrating, and the coach is going to be, you know, frustrated with a player or wanting to get more. But at the same time, they first and foremost need to know that you care about them, because if somebody's trying to hold them accountable and they know that they don't care about them, then, or not even know if they feel that, then it's just somebody that's being all over them. And so confidence, I think it's, like I said to you, I think confidence is built on preparation. I think that's the biggest thing, and that is something that we try to instill in the players, like Ryan said about teaching to be a pro and whatnot, and what it takes to be a pro. It's a process. It takes a while for some people to learn it earlier, some people learn it later, but I think that's the biggest thing about the confidence and whatnot. And that's, you know, it's just something that putting it over on to the players is that's, and even touching on the U20 here, that's we want that for the players. We want them to feel, we want them to be confident. We want them to be confident in themselves. There's enough outside noise that people talk and whatnot. But if they prepare properly, if they take care of the process, that builds confidence. But also as a coaching staff and coaches, we want to instill in the players a belief and that confidence. So I think it just, it has to happen naturally. It has to happen organically. Players are very knowledgeable today. Everybody wants to know the why. And they, so when they ask you that question, they know if it's fake or if it's real.
The confidence is so important because if one looks at the group, it's Canada, it's Sweden, it's Czech Republic, it's Germany, and it's Austria. You need to win at the very least one game to have a shot at staying in the A-pool. Otherwise, it's down to the relegation or the playouts. And we all know that anything can happen in a best of three series there. And if one just looks at Team Canada, of the 22 players that have been nominated for the World Juniors, 20 have been drafted to the National Hockey League, according to the Unibet stats. That's a 90% chance that you encounter an NHL draftee if you're playing against Canada. And of course, they're the juggernaut. And the same goes for Sweden, where two-thirds of all their players on the current World Juniors rosters have been drafted. But what kind of motivational tools are you trying to use to make players indeed believe that even if it's the slimmest of shots, you still have a shot?
I think people are people at the end of the day, with the way we want to play. And yeah, they have, just to touch on that, they have only, I believe I saw they have three kids undrafted on the roster. And two of them are supposed to be 1 and 2 this year. So it is what it is. It's the elephant in the room that everybody knows. And so we address it. We address it right away. And yeah, everybody's going to be, you know, nervous, and it's going to be a big crowd, and you just address it right away, and it is what it is. And, you know, you give the best fight that you can. But at the same time, the message is to build the confidence in the player. And that's what we're talking about with our way here, that we talk about our group. We talk about us, what we want to accomplish. We talk about the process. We talk about, we don't talk about the end goal, regardless of what the result is. We can't control the result. We can control how we act. We can control what we want to do, but we can't control how Canada is going to play. We can't, and I also don't want to. We are going to make adjustments as the tournament goes on. There's no doubt about it. But and when we're talking just about the other, this is the way I was as a player, and I can use this as an example. There was always the player that might come in the room and start talking about the opponent, this guy and that guy and that guy, and that just takes the focus away from your own group. And so, yeah, we have to do pre-scout. We have to prepare our players with what they're going to expect. But at the same time, it's always about us. It's about our group. We can't control anything outside of our group. What we can control is what we do. And as a coaching staff, again, we want to build belief and self-confidence in our group. And it's not an overnight thing. Like we said, it's a short process. And we want to give our players the best feeling that we possibly can. And we want to stay positive with them. But that being said, that doesn't mean that we're just rah, rah, cheer, cheer. We're going to hold each other accountable. But like I said, with the group that we had in November and the players that are coming in, I don't think that's something that's going to be, you know, we are going to have ups and downs. But it's our job as a staff, when the boys fall down, you know, we help them get back up, dust off the, or yeah, brush off the dirt and keep going forward here. So it's, again, I can't say enough. It's all about the Austrian U20 national team. It's not about anybody else. And it is about enjoying the experience, embracing the moments, but talking about us the whole time.
After I've already quoted the Unibet stats, Unibet, of course, has a special offer for all new customers. It's a 400% welcome bonus. Just use the promo code HOCKEY-BONUS while putting in 10 euros into your new account for the first time and receive 40 euros for free. More details in the show notes of the podcast. As always, Unibet, by players, for players. Got two more questions for you, coach, and then I'll hopefully be able to let you go so that you can catch the bus, because there is a practice to be held. Everybody should be circling the game against Canada, because even though Austria will be a huge underdog, of course, but everybody will be able to see Conor Bedard. Is it going to be Conor Bedard's tournament? Is this the world champion? I mean, he already broke out on the World Juniors the last time around, but is this the tournament where he solidifies his generational player status?
Yeah, I think that this is the stage that everybody kind of, any kid that comes through this tournament that has that attention, I think this is where he probably solidifies that. I have to be quite honest with you. I'm like anybody else, you see the highlights from him and whatnot, but from what the media is talking about here, you know, they have the pre-draft rankings and whatnot, and he's still consensus number one. So I think it's just going to be great for everybody, the fans and whatnot, to see him. And we're going to have to try to contain him as best as we can. So, but again, I think it is the stage that these kids really cement themselves in the position that they are.
Austria starts the tournament by playing Sweden on December 26th. Just a day later, it's the Czech Republic on the 29th. It's the aforementioned game against Canada on the 30th. It's the game against Germany. And if necessary, there's some relegation play for remaining in the A pool or going down the B pool against the last place finisher of Group B. And those relegation games are happening on the 2nd of January, the 4th of January, and if necessary, on the 5th of January as well. It's basically 10 days and potentially 7 games in there. How are you trying to deal with bodies and minds in this incredibly tight stretch, or for this incredibly tight stretch?
I think first and foremost, we as a staff, and that being including our doctors, physios, we have to manage that really well. This is not something that is for sure any player is used to for the most part, but especially European players are not playing that many games in such a short period of time. So we have to make sure we're listening to the players. We're listening to our staff, that we're understanding that it is a short time and our recovery is done really, really well. And the mental mindset, because your mental fatigue will set in. And that's something that we're talking about, you know, that we're constantly staying positive, that we're talking about the mental mindset moving forward. And I think that if we instill that process, I think the results, again, they ultimately take care of themselves. So it becomes more like we talked about with, like Ryan said it about tactics and whatnot, but all the answers and the questions right now are not really so much about the tactics as they are about the mental mindset and just guys taking care of themselves and us managing it as a staff as best as possible.
Last question, and I don't want to aim at a certain outcome. I just want to shoot you straight from the hip, or want you to shoot straight from the hip. What has to happen for you to fly home to Austria? Doesn't matter when, to say it's been a good tournament.
I think that at the end of the day, that the players, and I just talked about tactics, that we are paying attention to the details, and then with our identity that how we want to play. If we can come away from that saying that we gave it our best and we left it all out there, I know it's a cliche, but if we really, really do that, I think that we can come away and be proud of what we've done. Again, we can't control the results all the time. We can take care of the process, and I believe the process will give you the results that you deserve. But I think that's ultimately what we can do and come away. Again, the elephant in the room, right? Everybody knows that we want to stay up. It goes without saying. But I think that's ultimately what we have to do. And I think that at the end of the day, I think if we do that, I think the biggest thing coming away is the experience that these players will have moving forward. And they can take that away and hopefully they've learned from it. And then moving forward, if they become pro hockey players or pro at whatever it is that they do in their life, that they're able to take those tools moving forward, those experiences, and they're better people for it, and they're better colleagues, better teammates for it.
Couldn't have put it any better. Thank you so much for taking such extensive time. Wish you all the best personally, and of course the team as well for the World Juniors. I'll be watching. Hopefully a lot of listeners here on Unibet Hockey O'Clock will tune in. The game start on December 26th. Kirk Fury, it's been a pleasure talking to you. All the best for the tournament.
Thanks, Martin. I really appreciate you having me on, and look forward to the next time.
Exzellente Unterhaltung mit dem schönsten Sport der Welt.
Unibet Hockey O'Clock.